alone. Step by step.
And welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Stephanie. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a minute to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? So let's start the meditation. Now let's read the Foglight Prayer. If you do not know it, there are book cards in front of you, or you can repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me like a foglight, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Dane to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
Thank you. My name is Dane. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in the book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of a sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by him alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer. This is taken from Alcoholics Anonymous, pages 567 and 568. Thank you.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane mode, meeting mode, or please turn them off. And now for the seventh session, Marion.
Hi, everybody. I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Let me see if I can find this. Okay. Nice to see you all. Great to be here. I feel like this is definitely family. I just love a warm welcome and love how you guys make me feel like I can just be me. And Mike and I were talking about that a little bit in the parking lot I was always stumbling and falling, and I'm not enough. I'm these places we can go in our head. And I'm going to read something that I absolutely love. And it's not AA-approved literature. It's just a little quote that I love with my whole heart. And so this is us. Dear human, you've got it all wrong. You didn't come here to master unconditional love. That's where you come from and where you'll return. You came here to learn personal love, universal love, messy love, sweaty love, crazy love, broken love, whole love infused with divinity. Live through the grace of stumbling. Demonstrate it through the beauty of messing up often. You didn't come here to be perfect. You already are. You came here to be gorgeously human, flawed and fabulous, and then to rise again into remembering. But unconditional love Stop telling that story. Love and truth doesn't need any other adjectives. It doesn't require modifiers. It doesn't require the condition of perfection. It only asks that you show up and do your best. That you stay present and feel fully. That you shine and fly and laugh and cry and hurt and heal and fall and get back up and play and work and live and die as you. It's enough. It's plenty. I think so often we want to, you know, it's, I think the deal of God's done in my heart is really that just sums life up for me, is to come to forgiveness for me, come to forgiveness for others, to do this work, press in, go, move forward, screw it up, and get back up again. And that we can help, you know, and using the fellowship, using others around me, using, you know, and not relying on my own strength. Because in and of myself, guys, I'm like a lot like my sponsor. In and of myself, I'm sucking my thumb, I'm in bed, and I'm depressed. And, you know, I can tell you 27 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I need this program as much today as I did when I first came in. And I can't even say that. I feel like I know that I need it more. You know, I need to sponsor more women. I need to be at more meetings. I need to be in this big book more. I need to press into God more than I ever did. Because this never goes away, guys. You know, today, I don't know what it is. Like the last couple of days, I have this thing in me where, you know, it gets around Christmas time and I'm crying for everybody and I'm, oh my God, you know, how do I save them? How do I get that puppy? How do I help that old lady? How do I, you know, but God's done that in and through me, in and through me, that it's no longer, my life is not my own. My life is a life of surrender. My life is a life of service. And that doesn't mean I can't get caught up in me. That doesn't mean I can't get the poor me's. And that doesn't mean that I can't isolate and I can't get selfish and I can't start lying, cheating, thieving, all those things that we have in our alcoholism, guys, ours. And so the beauty, you know, what Mike wanted me to share tonight is just my journey through the first 9 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know how much I'll go in the book. I have no idea what I'm going to say. All I know is, you know, every single week I come to do this thing, I get kind of tortured in my head. You know, I kind of do. And it's like, God, if you don't show up and you don't speak in and through me, we're in a whole lot of trouble. Because messy, crazy, and no, it's messy every week. We know that. You know, the nose starts running. It's messy. And that's okay. Because that's who God's made me to be. And I wouldn't trade everything I've been through in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't trade a moment of my life for anybody else's today. And I can tell you, I spent a lot of years wanting to be anybody else. And if you felt that loneliness that us alcoholics feel, if you have felt that separation that us alcoholics feel, if they only knew me, if they only knew my head, if they only understood me, oh my God, if I could just be brave enough to let somebody in to know who I am. Welcome to the messiest people on the planet. You know, that's what we are. And I'm undone by this. You know, 27 years ago to say that I get to do the things I get today and feel the way I feel today and just look at the people around me and just say, I love you.
And when they say, I love you back to me, that I can actually feel that today. That's what this Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. And for that, I'm overpaid. That's what a relationship with a loving God has given me. And for that, I'm overpaid. And so welcome, messy people. This is where I wanted to go. My favorite chapter in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know in this meeting, in this group in particular, we get a lot of, you know, treatment centers, people that are new. It's like maybe sometimes you got a nudge from the judge, you know, you got court ordered to be here, or that's what my sponsor says. I tried my Polly Pistol accent. Did it work? A nudge from the judge. Or maybe it was our wife, or maybe it was our girlfriend, or maybe it was, you know, just all the people that always pointed the finger at us saying, you're screwed up, can you go get some help? You know, but I hope you find what you're looking for here. I hope that if you have this disease, if you have the hopeless state of mind and body and spirit, that you find this fellowship that I crave, this fellowship that we crave. In a vision for you, it says, for most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. Boy, I remember the first days when I first took my first drinks, and that's how I felt. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It's joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. I ran and I chased that. I just wanted a moment when it would work. Just a moment. Just some relief. There was the insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession, that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always more attempt and one more failure. The great obsession of every alcoholic. One more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself, as we became subjects of King Alcohol. I was shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It was thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places. All of us did, I think. Hoping to find understanding, companionship with approval. Momentarily we did. Then we would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. Hannah, I'm going to go here. We smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. And I can tell you, after all these years, my alcoholism is still like the boy whistling in the dark. It always... They used to say this all the time, that our disease progresses whether we pick up or not. You know, and I've seen old timers. I remember this woman back in my hometown who had many, many years in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she picked up and she drank. And I used to live on top of this mountain, and I'd go out for walks on this mountain. And she was someone who helped me in early recovery. She was at dry dock, and she spent a lot of time with women in this book. And here she was. I mean, can't remember how long, years and years of sobriety. And she picked up. And I'm out walking on my mountain, and I come across this trailer. Maybe it was 12 foot, one of those little old metal trailers. Opens the door. She's in there with, like, all these dogs and just crazy and just drunk and didn't even know who I was. And it's like, I think of that, you know, what would I do to pick up? Would I be that? I always think I'm going to be that bag lady. I don't know. I don't know whether alcohol would take me down or where it'd make, whether I'd be crazy or whatever. But that disease progressed in that woman. And when she picked up where she left off and worse. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be, am I to be consigned to a life where I should be stupid, boring, and glum? I mean, that's how I felt when I came in. It's like, great, I landed in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now my life is over. Where's the fun going to be? This sucks. Like some righteous people I see. And that was always it, too, looking at them as being self-righteous, looking at them as being shiny and, oh, God, glowy, and then there's the scum of the earth like me. I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? And we see this in this room, and we see this on the Monday night group, and we see this in all the fellowships around Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes, there's a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. And I love this promise right here. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. Should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure that they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. And when the big book comes alive to you, when the big book, when you find you in here, when you go through it with the sponsor and you go through the steps and you read it from the beginning and you understand the first pages of Alcoholics Anonymous and in the doctor's opinion and the first 43 pages talking about the obsession of the mind and the body. And then going into the chapter to the agnostic and finding why to find God. I came into this fellowship and I had a God of my understanding. And I couldn't get sober. And I always thought that the chapter to the agnostic wasn't for me. It's like, that's for the people who don't get God. I got God, but I can't get sober. So it was like this oxymoron in my life. It's like, how do you have this God in your life, but you can't get sober? And that's exactly where I was. I had a heart full of God and a belly full of booze at the same time, guys. And I don't know if you're like me, if you've ever been that, like people that have relapsed and you've had these experiences with God and you've experienced this fellowship and the light's gone on for you. And then you chose by some reason that you're not done. And this, for some reason you go back out again. But just knowing, having that, the taste of what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. Recently, my fiance Peter was speaking at a group, and this young man came up to him, and he's relapsed many, many, many times. And he came up to Peter and he said, I just miss that so much. I miss the beginning days. I miss that connection with God with my whole heart, and I'll never get it back again. And then looking at a whole old timers table and how we can tend to be look back at the good old days and how it was at Dry Dock or Northwest Group or all these places where it was just so awesome, you know. But the deal is our big book explains that to us, that, you know, we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. My life is about me living in all three sides of the triangle, whether I'm in the steps, you know, whether I'm where I'm in service and where I'm recovered, how I'm living in those three sides of the triangle with the circle around, safe and protected by God. You know, the chronic relapser in the big book, and it talks about him, that he had many years of sobriety, but what he failed to do was his spiritual growth. That's where he failed. You know, and so many times we can worship all the things that point us to this God. You know, I can tell you that there isn't a person in this room that doesn't have a God in their life. I believe that all the time. That if you're an alcoholic like me, or you've used drugs like many of us have, you know, there's something keeping you in this room. There's something keeping you in this seat. There's some power working bigger than us right here. Whether your own conception of God right now is the great outdoors, whether your own conception of God is a good orderly direction because your treatment center leader brought you here, whether your own conception of God, no matter, you know, it says in our big book, with a mustard seed of willingness, with an absolute mustard seed of willingness. And you can't tell me that looking around this room tonight that everybody here doesn't have a mustard seed of willingness. So I love that a lot. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. Like my sponsor pours on me all the time. I can pick up the phone. I can be selfish. I can be self-centered. I can be self-seeking. And she'll say to me, Marian, just go help somebody. Just go help somebody. Pick up your book. Go help somebody. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Well, how do we get there? How do we get to that relationship with God? You know, Joe H. has this really beautiful talk on the second step, and he's talking about how we can worship working with others, and we can worship working these steps, and we can worship service, and we can worship all the fingers that point to this higher power. We can worship the fingers rather than what it's pointing to. Okay? So I want to make that clear in my life. I want to make that clear that I'm living in unity, that I'm living in service, that I'm living in recovery, and that I'm seeking this God like with the desperation of a drowning woman. Because guys, where that ends up for me when I'm not doing that, it leads me to two pages I always send my sponsees to. Two pages I send them to is page 25 and page 52. And page 52 talks about, which a lot of us already know, but that's okay. We had to ask ourselves, and we're turning these into questions. We had to ask ourselves in our sobriety to apply our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. Were we having trouble in personal relationships? Can we control our emotional nature? Are we prey to misery and depression? Are we having trouble making a living? Are we feeling usefulness? Are we full of fear? Are we unhappy? We couldn't seem to be of real help to others. Was not a basic solution to these bedevilments more important than whether we see newsreels of lunar flight? You guys, the passion to change this world, the passion to save a drunk, the passion to save an alcoholic. If I'm living in these places, I need to be clean. I need to work this stuff. I need to be released from this stuff so I can live in page 25. The great fact is just this and nothing else, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And I often say to my sponsees, it's like, where are you in the balance of that page 25 compared to page 52? Where are you living? And through that process of the first steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I began, you know, you guys know I went to treatment. I worked the first three steps in treatment. I was in detox for 3 days, and I had this mind. I had that mental obsession that it talks about in our first 43 pages, where I was laying in that detox, and on the third day, I had this overwhelming feeling that I had overreacted, and it was time to go home. And that didn't make any sense. Two alcoholics came in, sat at the end of the bed, and they explained what one alcoholic talks to another, that language of the heart, that obsession of the alcoholic, that this is what alcoholism has done to me. So the first, they had explained to me and talked my language, what our big book talks about. They spoke my language. They spoke the language of an alcoholic, and they weren't condemning and they weren't putting me down. They were telling their story. And I found myself over and over and over again saying, yeah, that's me. That's me. That's me. And these were the first beginnings of finding God. You know, I worked the first three steps in the treatment center, went to an outside meeting. I'm sitting at an outside meeting. And one more time again, my head is trying to take me out. I'm at this meeting with wavy floors, with clanky radiators, and a bunch of old people that are crusty and they're smoking, chain smoking cigarettes. And I'm like, one more time again, I'm thinking, trying to disqualify myself from the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. One more time again in the beginning. And this little woman against the wall opened up her mouth and she shared her story. And I don't remember, it was an open share meeting, but what she said was the language of the heart to me. And the deal was, and they used to say this, a lot of old timers used to say this, stick around long enough and hear somebody tell your story. And she did. And what was important about the message of that woman that night, because one more time my head was trying to come up with a fancy answer of why I didn't need Alcoholics Anonymous. But what happened in that talk when that woman was sharing her story that night was she was a woman who was just like me, who was no longer just like me. See, she had had a spiritual experience. She had had the obsession removed in the process of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was like me, and she was no longer like me. And that gave me hope that day. And I stuck around, and I stayed. And I stayed in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got out of treatment. I got my first sponsor. I was busy in the rooms of AA. I got into service. I got my ashtray commitment. You know, back in the days, 27 years ago, you were smoking, they were chain smoking cigarettes in the rooms. And I had this friend, C.B. McLaren, who came up to me, and he was the first guy to ever know my name. And he said, "Hi, Marianne." And I felt like I belonged at last. Invited me to the business meeting, gave me my first commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I washed those ashtrays, and I cleaned those ashtrays, and I set them on the table, and there was a miracle that happened for me in that sink while I was washing those ashtrays, because no longer was I thinking of me. I was thinking of how, of others, and how I could be of service, and I felt a part of, much like how this group is run every week, you know, people that set up after the meeting, or set tear down after the meeting, or set up before the meeting, or make a pot of coffee. This doesn't just happen by mistake. It happens by people that are willing to give of themselves. And I can bet you that the people that set up this meeting feel a little bit of selflessness when they're doing that. And not calling attention to themselves and saying, look at me, how great I am. I'm the guy who makes the coffee. And look at me, how great I am, because I'm the one who cleans up afterwards. You know, a lot of the things that my first sponsor taught me was to be of service and not to draw attention to myself. And usually she was saying things like, Marianne, do something nice for somebody and don't tell them. And don't tell anybody. She put me into things like that. It's like, don't let anybody catch you doing something nice. The world's kind of got a little bit of a flavor of that because of that whole paying it forward. But Alcoholics Anonymous came up with that a long time ago. But maybe somebody had it before that. And so I learned to get out of myself. And I learned to keep thinking of me. And I learned to be a part of. And I learned to, you know, I sit across the table from old timers that say, you know, when I would beat myself up and they point me to places in the book that got me in. Marianne, God don't make no junk. God don't make no junk. God loves you. Get in this fellowship. You know, come in the doors. And I remember, you know, just the fellowship just loving on me, and remember not having money to pay my power bill one day. And for some reason in this open discussion meeting, I was sobbing about that. The next day I left the window rolled down in my car, and I got in my car after the meeting, and there was a money order sitting on the front seat of my car for the amount of my power bill. And that person, whoever it was, which could have been my sponsor, now this day I think of it, but the name was scribbled on the bottom that it was signed. I don't know where that came from. But you know what? That spoke to my family. And it spoke to them of this fellowship, that they didn't know who you guys were. My kids didn't know who you were at the beginning. But they knew that somebody in that fellowship, in and of themselves, gave freely to me that day. Gave freely to me. And taught me to give. And taught me to give back. You know, you guys, this fellowship is home. It's just home. So I meet this sponsor. I've got this first sponsor. I'm telling her at this meeting that I've got my kids to take care of this weekend. She asked me, what are you doing this weekend? I'm running off all the things I need to do. And she tells me, Marianne, one of these days, maybe you'll slow down long enough for God to be in charge. And it was one of those moments in my life where it just penetrated my heart and was like, oh my God, I need this woman in my life. And she took me through the rest of the steps. And you guys know that, you know, when I came here, I was a year before I came here, I lost my son in January. I lost my mom in August. And I didn't know how to grieve in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That all happened before I got sober. My son had died of crib death and my mom died of cancer. And here was this woman, Kathy, with many years in the fellowship, who did campouts and potlucks and all these beautiful acts of service, her and her husband, Art. And she was diagnosed with brain cancer early on in my sobriety. And I didn't want to call her, and I didn't want to reach out to her, and I didn't want to bother her. And she would call me. You know, because when you're new in sobriety, it's like the littlest things. It's like, I don't even know how to grocery shop sober. I don't know how to tie my shoes sober. I don't know how to do anything sober, you know? And I just would, I had problems. You know, I'd have stumblings. I'd have problems. And I wouldn't want to call her. And she would call me and she would say, Miriam, why aren't you calling? And I said, but Kathy, look what you're going through. Look what life is doing. You know, you're losing your hair. You're going through chemo. And she says, don't deny me my sobriety. Don't you deny me my sobriety. And she'd have me out at her house. She lived out in a place on the Northwest Road in Bellingham. And we would walk out on her property and we'd collect leaves. And she took me through my four-step, helping me to write it. I ended up doing my fifth step with a pastor. I had talked to you guys about that. I didn't do it with an alcoholic. I did it with a pastor from the suggestion of my brother who lived under the bridge, you know? And that was my first go around with my fifth step. And I'm grateful for that. He sat down, he loved me through that. It was the most humiliating experience of my entire life. And I looked up from those pages as I poured through those pages, and I looked up at him and he said, Miriam, were you afraid I wasn't going to love you anymore? And I had written that step just like it talks about in our book. I had written that step with as much honesty and as much clarity, with not a page being unturned. And that man loved me through that. He gave me my hour of quiet. He gave me my hour of quiet. He pointed out my defects of character. And I did that seven-step prayer for the first time in my life. Now, I can't say, I can tell you that day I walked a free woman, because I did walk a free woman. I later had lunch with my sponsor that day, and I felt like there was a separateness. I felt like the woman that I was and the woman I was to become was a totally different person. Was a totally different person. I was able to look the world in the eye, and I was able to be right-sized. And one thing that my sponsor taught me early on in those days is, Marion, you're no better than anybody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're no less than anybody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, those steps helped me to look the world in the eye, to be free at last. And then when we come to 8 and 9, what we're doing is we've done the work inside of us, and now it's time to go out to our fellows and to make things right. And I talked to you last week about making those amends to my children, and how hard that was, and how they just looked at me and said, "Mom, don't go to the bar anymore. Mom, will you tuck me in? Mom, I want breakfast." They would ask me the simplest things. Help me put on my shoes, you know, whatever it was. Showing up to baseball games and showing up to soccer games. And sometimes I overdid it. You know, I'd have the whole football team over, or I'd be making lunch for them, and it was the most beautiful time of making amends to them in my life. You know, seeing where I was at fault, seeing the things that I needed to change. Because I can tell you about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I can tell you about this program, is I can't afford to beat me up anymore, guys. I can't afford to not be able to look myself in the eye and to be right with my brothers and sisters and to be right with God. I live for that today. I live for that. And It's not about, and the ways I can seek comfort in anything else, whether it's shopping, whether it's food, whether it's any other way we can seek, like it talks about in Bedevilments, and then we can seek other ways. Like, it's Christmas time. I mean, who doesn't want to go out and buy a present for everyone, you know? And it's like this piece of us that wants to just fill that place, that hole, that God-sized hole. What the big book is designed to do is to take us to that place, to a relationship with God, to a place of wholeness, to a place of recovered, of body, mind, and spirit. And today, I live happily, joyous, and free as a result of that stuff. So over the next few weeks, apparently, I'm going to be doing 10, 11, and 12, but Michael just wanted me to do a little recap of where I've been. And so I'm always done at 9 o'clock, it seems like. And that's all I have for tonight. God bless you all.
Let's hear it one more time for our speaker. And now Fred with the Secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked a friend to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Damon. I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940s style Big Book sponsorship. From the Ford to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. You can please stand up for us. Everyone who's available for sponsorship, can we please meet him up after the meeting? Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room over here where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's session and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsingod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See you all next Thursday. Godspeed.
Thirsty bodies aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do is. I'm praying, 'cause on my own I just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try, but with you I become a much stronger man. Getting on my knees puts me back on my feet again. Load is heavy, too much accumulation. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all. Can't get it right. It doesn't matter.
Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you. Yes, when you're laughing. When you're laughing, yes, the sun shining through. But when you're crying,
oh, love you, baby.
Well, how far now do you stay?
Yeah, I'm so amazing.
Bring on the rain.
Oh, good.
But yeah, so
I guess we'll be on the next spot.
So, okay. Stop your sighing, baby. And be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope it's mine.
Thank you. Hallelujah.